14 years old, her family moved from California to a rural area of Middle Tennessee, and she was in culture shock. And then one week, she was catapulted into local stardom as she was followed around by a Channel 4 news crew. Not only followed around by a Channel 4 news crew, but something she said became the soundbite for an entire week. We'll find out what happened in just a moment. Hello, everyone. I'm Pamela Brewer, welcoming you to this edition of Mind Talk, and really pleased to have you with us today. And very happy to introduce today's guest, whose name actually is very interesting. Her name is Amber Hurdle, and I would say that she certainly has overcome many hurdles along her path. Amber is described as a powerhouse businesswoman who has worked with international celebrities, Fortune 500 companies, and women in business worldwide. Amber, welcome to Mind Talk.
Thank you so much for having me, Pamela. I'm privileged to be here.
So you just heard me go back just a couple of days in your life to your period of time as a 16-year-old superstar on Channel 4 in Middle Tennessee. So life was great, yes?
Oh, it sure seemed like it at the time. Things were going well. I had recently moved from Orange County, California, and had started to really acclimate into the smaller community that I lived in. I was very involved. I decided to just dive in head first and also look at solving some of the problems that were existing in the school. And one of those was actually interracial relations. And so I was a strong part of a group called All Races Together, who put together this. It was actually started at our school, but then ended up being a satellite program that went to other schools as well. So Channel 4 got wind of my leadership in this, and they covered me as well as other teenagers, leaders in the area who were solving problems like that and dealing with hard issues. And they featured me at 6 and 10, as you said. And the little sound bite was a question that they asked me, and that was, is everyone in high school having sex? And my parents taught me never to use words like, and I just did it, to not frequently, not haphazardly use words like everyone, you know, never, always, no one, because it's so general. And so my response and the soundbite they selected was, no, not everyone's having sex. And of course, I had my Southern California Valley Girl accent at the time, so it was even more poignant. And so that was it. And then a couple of weeks later, I got some news that made that little soundbite extra embarrassing.
Oops. Tell us about what you learned a couple of weeks later and how you learned it.
Well... I started having just a variety of symptoms. I've come from, or I've always had some stomach issues and some autoimmune things. And so having an upset stomach wasn't a big deal to me. Having random headaches wasn't a big deal to me. And I kept having just this, I was super tired. And I even sat in the living room and listed off these ailments to my mom. And, you know, she also being accustomed to just some random things out of the blue. I wasn't an unhealthy child, but every once in a while I would have a flare-up. I don't think she thought anything of it either. And then one day her friend dropped off a book that she had borrowed of my mother's. And it's What to Expect When You're Expecting. I'm sure any woman who's ever had a baby has had that book. And, so I was reading through the first trimester, just thumbing through it because I was bored, and saw all of my symptoms in one place in a pregnancy book. So I went and was tested and tested again and tested a third time and found out that at 16 years old, I was in fact pregnant. So that was definitely mentally a huge life shift and a mental shift from wanting to be a leader in my school to understanding I needed to be a leader first to my child.
That is an understatement to say that it was a huge shift. How did your parents take this news?
They were fabulous. My parents are not loosey-goosey, whatever goes kind of parents. We were raised in a structured environment. I joke that my mom was definitely the strict one. I was terrified, but also confident that my parents would love me through anything, just from experiences and things that both my mom and my dad said. I was scared of my mom's reaction because she was the strict one, and I was scared of disappointing my dad because I'm a total daddy's girl and always have been. But, you know, my mom said, I'm disappointed in the decision that you made, which, of course, is, you know, having sex before I was ready or, you know, unprotected. I mean, we could just go down the list of things there that got me into my predicament. But she wasn't disappointed. You can't be disappointed in a human life. But that was something to be happy about and to celebrate. And that's how we were going to move forward with this. So we talked about it. We woke up my dad, which was awful. I was like, can't we wait till morning? Of course, my mom said,
maybe you'll be less pregnant.
Yeah, exactly. We'll just undo itself tonight. But she said, you know, it's not fair that I know and your dad doesn't. And that's a true statement. So we woke up my dad, and the first thing he said is, you know, I want you to finish school. Your education is everything for you and for this baby. There was a lot of crying, and then my mom went to go run some errands. This was late at night too, so she came back with whatever she got at the store plus some prenatal vitamins and a pack of onesies. So at that point, I knew I had my parents behind me. That did not make it a cakewalk, by the way, but at least I had the support and the love of my parents who never threw it back in my face. I've never gotten the first, well, if you didn't get pregnant, or, well, this is the consequence of the decisions you made when you decided to have a kid at 16. Those things never came up. And I understand many, many teenage girls in my position have been kicked out of their homes, you know, berated, abandoned, you know, so there's, I do have quite a story, but that's one part that I can cling to and be very thankful for.
What an extraordinary gift that your parents were able to, as you said, love you through anything, including a completely unanticipated pregnancy at the age of 16. And we're not going to go through the details of that, but you had quite a challenging pregnancy, certainly emotionally, but also physically as well. But I want to fast forward to the Amber Hurdle, who today is, as you heard me describe you before, a businesswoman extraordinaire in a lot of ways, and the author of The Bombshell Businesswoman. And I want to ask you what your interpretation is of the bombshell businesswoman. Because, you know, when people hear the word bombshell, they think a couple of things. Either something terrible is about to be dropped on one, or it's this ragingly hot, sexy woman that you can't take your eyes off. So which one of those did you mean when you named your book The Bombshell Businesswoman?
Neither. I have redefined the term, and I couldn't be more proud, especially in today's world that we're living in, with all of with the news, just talk about bombshells hitting, with women finally feeling empowered to come forward and talk about the times that they were sexually harassed or sexually assaulted. And I want to take that word back from being a male-driven, overly sexualized word, and make it about the woman who walks into a room and her head's turned because that woman is so confident in who she is and what she offers the world. Even a beautiful woman, if we're going to refer to her as a bombshell, and I mean by, you know, cultural standards today, is she really being gawked at because she is physically just a unique specimen, or is it because she knows that she's beautiful and she walks in with that refreshing confidence? And I say it's the later. So I've redefined the term bombshell to mean a bold, brave, unwaveringly confident woman. And for this book, a bold, brave female entrepreneur. And that begins with studying yourself the way that you study Glamour magazine to figure out how to perfectly contour your face. We put so much time and attention into how we look to the outside world, especially in a Pinterest perfect world with social media just driving our self-esteem, that I think if we get to know ourselves and how we uniquely contribute to society and to the workforce and using our gifts to serve other people, which is what life is all about, we would find a lot more fulfillment and feel like a bombshell every single day.
So the idea that you that being a bombshell is not at all, has nothing to do with your physical appearance, but has to do with your internal self, positive self-awareness. That really is a different twist on the word bombshell woman.
Well, I've been known to make up words, and so I figured I can I can redefine a few words as well.
Absolutely.
And I think we need that right now. I mean, there's such a tension, especially with professional women now. I'm in awe both of how many women are coming forward and saying, you know what, I just want to be who I am. I want to do my job, and I don't want to have to deal with all this other stuff that comes along with being a woman. And if there was ever a time, especially in today's news cycle, where we look inward and we're so confident that we know when things are okay and when things are not okay, we know to stand up for ourselves. We know to, even beyond that, like, forget the defense. What about offense? To raise your hand and say, I am the solution to this problem, or I might not know what that solution is, but I will figure it out. And that's a very male-centric type attitude. Men jump and then they figure out the plan, and women tend to think, well, I don't have enough experience, or I don't know enough about that, and so we hold back. And yet we probably have skills like empathy and strong active listening, being able to see where things fit into a bigger picture instead of what's right in front of us. And I'm not saying we're better than men, certainly not. I mean, my mentors have been men. I have, like I said, I have a fabulous father, I have three wonderful brothers, I have tons of male friends, so I'm not man bashing. It's just every day I wake up and there's something in the news that makes me more and more inspired and passionate about teaching women to love themselves and to understand how much they can help their organizations, their businesses, their communities, their families, if they will step up to the plate and embrace that inner bombshell.
You know, you've just said something that almost in passing that was really insightful. And so I just want to go back to it for a second. You said that men have a habit of sort of jumping and then figuring it out, and women have a habit of telling themselves that they don't have all the experience they need. They'll sort of perseverate over what they don't have instead of utilizing their energy to trust and believe in themselves and jump, if you will, and then figure it out. That happens so many times to so many people, to so many women.
Yeah, it really does. And I feel like that's something that I can speak to because I did start behind the eight ball. I was a teen mom. I had to figure out how to get caught up. And I knew that my professional career was the avenue to a more sustainable and abundant life. It was my avenue to be able to provide for my daughter. And so I didn't have the luxury of second guessing myself. I had to jump on opportunities and figure it out as I went. And so that typically masculine trait, I'm not saying that they're, again, getting back to my parents' lesson, never say never or no one. It is a typical male trait, and it's something that I had to get over very quickly if I just wanted to survive life. And so to go through my adult life and my career with that mindset and then observing women do the opposite, it can be both frustrating but then also exciting when I get to see that light bulb over a woman's head just flip on, and when she understands, she doesn't have to have all the answers. She doesn't have to have all the experience. She just has to have the passion and the intention to learn and fail forward and get better at what she does.
You know, as I was beginning to read The Bombshell Businesswoman, and you were talking about the difference between a bombshell woman and not, it almost seemed like you were not happy about women who are choosing or have the option, because so many women don't, to be the stay-at-home mom and to focus on home and their child or their children. But that's actually the very opposite of what you're getting to as you talk about the bombshell woman. Can you speak a little bit to that? Because so many, as you know, so many women still, if they have the ability to stay at home with their child while they enjoy that, there's somebody who's going to help them feel a little bit guilty about the fact that they're staying mm-hmm. home. Or if they're not staying home with their child, there's somebody's going to help them feel a little bit guilty about not staying at home.
Yeah, isn't it fabulous how everybody has an opinion, and now we have the interwebs for everybody to express these opinions. So,
right.
You know, one of my very best friends, Cindy, whom I work out with 5-6 days a week, stays at home with her twins, and she has an 8-year-old son, I guess he's about 9 now, and her husband travels a lot with his business. And so it makes the most sense for their family unit working together as a team for her to manage all the other aspects of their life while he's in sales and traveling. That doesn't take anything away from her. In fact, she is a licensed clinical social worker. She is an educated woman. And even if she wasn't, some women choose to use their gifts to serve their family first, and then as a unit of their family, whatever that family looks like in terms of members, in order to present their best to the world. And good for them, and they should never feel guilty about that when somebody says something as snarky as, oh, well, she doesn't work. She's using her gifts just like a woman in the workplace is using her gifts, and it's just being done in different ways. But then you have women who are like me. I stayed home, and I'm very appreciative of it. I still worked some, but I stayed home for the first year of my son's life. It'll be 15 next week. I was going to claw the walls by the end of that year. I had more respect for stay-at-home moms because my brain just doesn't operate that way. And I need a complex operational challenge for me to feel like I'm contributing with the gifts that God gave me. And so it's really about stepping into what you were called to do. And some people feel comfortable saying, you know, this is the universe telling you, you know, what you should do, or spirit. And some people, you know, they believe in God. And from my perspective, I know that God gave me innate gifts. And shame on me if I don't figure out how to maximize those gifts, because that's what brings fulfillment. So whether that is organizing the toys and making sure that dinner is set and all the bills are paid, or whatever it is that a woman would do at home, or whether that's going in and working on the corporate budget, or presenting, you know, like a process improvement program, or a sales strategy. If you don't feel alive doing what you're doing, it's probably time to take a step back, get to know yourself a little bit better, find out what problems you solve best, and go for it, no matter where that is.
Folks, you are listening to Amber Hurdle, who is the author of The Bombshell Businesswoman, How to Become a Bold, Brave Female Entrepreneur. We're going to take a break. We'll be right back, so you stay right where you are. Thank you. talking about your friend who's a licensed clinical social worker is taking care of, I think you said, the twins and an eight-year-old. And I'm thinking, all right, every single skill she learned to become a licensed clinical social worker and then some is probably what keeps her mostly sane most of the time. Oh, my gosh. I am so not jealous.
Right? And I say all the time, I mean, I just adore her kids. I'm not necessarily a big kid person. Like, I'm not a person who's attracted, you know, always wants to go be at the kids' table or that sort of thing. I love my kids and I love my friends' children and, of course, my granddaughters. But those kids, if I see them, I have to be around them. I have to be hugging them. I have to be playing with them. I mean, she has raised just the most amazing children. And what an important role that is. I mean, you just can't surpass preparing the next generation. Nothing to be ashamed of.
Absolutely. And, you know, I think about some of the things that are going on today, and I'm thinking, gee, you know, if they had different parenting experiences with mom and with dad, we might be in a completely different world. So absolutely, bravo to those brave souls who can manage and tolerate and, you know, deal with the ups and downs of being the stay-at-home mom. And, you know, we're not doing a commercial for stay-at-home moms, but my goodness, it is so important to acknowledge how critically important our lives are and how critically important the work that stay-at-home moms do, because they're working 24/7.
Absolutely. They don't get 6 days. They don't get their vacation pay. but then, you know, on the flip side, and, you know, working moms are listening to this, you know, now I can almost feel the angst coming up. Well, I should be a stay-at-home mom, or well, I work all day and I don't get a sick day. And especially the single moms out there, single dads, you know, absolute shout out to you for being everything to everybody. You know, for those women who are working and then also trying to raise the next generation of leaders and critical thinkers, it's possible for you to do that too. And it's possible to find that intentional time and to look for ways to, yeah, I hate the word balance. I just don't think balance is a thing. It's about managing the different seasons of life and being open with your family about when the work season is heavy, and then being intentional and present, putting electronics up and, you know, making special memories and moments, talking about the important things in life and not skirting issues. Using the television as a talking tool and as an opportunity to address things that are going on in the world instead of just, you know, everybody's doing the iPhone prayer at dinner. I think whoever you are and whatever path that you choose, if you're a single mom or a stay-at-home mom, rather, trying to keep your sanity, or if you're a working mom, trying to keep your sanity in a different way. I think the number one word I would love to use, and I still find ways to do this for myself, but that's showing ourselves and each other grace. I think grace is a word that should be a post-it note on everybody's computer screen.
And wouldn't, again, we would have such a different world. We'd also have a very different world, and quite frankly, less of a need for even something like the Bombshell Businesswoman book if we'd stop putting ourselves and other people in these little, tiny, narrowly constrained boxes and then sort of going all cuckoo if somebody takes the lid off the box.
Right. So true. Yeah, what, you know, it's funny because we were talking about this, and I'm a part of the Nashville TEDx Society of Fellows, and we were talking about technology and, you know, what's the number one way that we can use technology like virtual reality and things like that to improve the world. And we talked about everything from food supplies and all that good jazz. And the thing that kept bubbling up for me all night long was to use it for empathy, to see the world through somebody else's eyes, to actually feel what it feels like to, in any situation, but, you know, to be a stay-at-home mom, to be a working woman who's trying to beat the clock to daycare to get her kids because her meeting went over, to be a man observing what it's like to be a woman who is being sexually harassed at work and afraid that if she says anything, then she won't have that job, she won't be able to provide for children, I mean, there's so many ways, and I could go on and on and on from a social or socioeconomic standpoint too, but that's a key piece that's missing. And I just go back to, if you know yourself so well that you're confident in who you are, you don't have to project yourself on other people, and you don't have to make other people believe what you believe. You're just confident in who you are, and therefore confident that other people can find their own path too.
Let's talk a little bit about how you got from the 16-year-old pregnant teenager to the bombshell businesswoman, and you give all kinds of tips. And honestly, I mean, I personally am going to kind of hold on to this, and I think maybe carry your book around with me. How did you get from one place to another?
Well, imagine the scariest roller coaster that you've ever been on or seen, and that seems like that was my life during that season. But there are a few things that I could pull out that I think really, really helped me. And the first one, again, was understanding what it was that people appreciated about me. You know, where was I solving problems? And I just kept doing that over and over and over again. And so that there was like a, you know, oh, give that to Amber, or Amber will step up to that, or we should call Amber for that. But there was a promotion that was available. I got those. I got more hours, you know, if I was working hourly. I got better shifts because I was worth it, quote, to them, because they understood my value, and they couldn't have understood that if I didn't. So figuring that out, figuring out what you're great at. And then also finding mentors for everything. I mean, if I didn't know how to do something, I found someone who knew how to do it. And that's how I learned how to finance a car. That's how I learned how to buy a house. That's how I learned how to interview. That's how I learned how to do sales and marketing, how to do cold calls and phone sales. When I went back, I left college because I couldn't do college and work and try to raise my daughter all at the same time. And I was going through depression at the time, of course, that I didn't realize, but looking back, it's so obvious. And I couldn't do all of that. So I left college. But when I went back to college, it's because I found out that I did this thing really great called public relations. And it was never part of my job description, but I just did it. And it became a part of what I did. And so I realized there was a piece of paper that the state of Tennessee would give you that says you can do that for a living. So I went back to college. And so obviously I needed mentors for this whole public relations thing that I did. And I would also... I mean, gosh, we could go on and on, but probably in the interest of time, the third most important thing is not losing hope. I can't even tell you how many nights I fell asleep crying, how many times I just hated myself because I felt like I was failing. I felt like, you know, my daughter was going to be stuck with this life that she didn't deserve because she's brilliant. I mean, she was a smart baby. She was a smart woman. And I knew that she had it in her to have a good future if I could help her get there. And so I quickly, when I found myself in those positions, and we're dealing with depression in this too, is finding that hope. Just finding the hope for the next day. Well, tomorrow I will get this many hours at job number one. I will get this many hours at job number two. And so I maybe be late on my car payment again, but I will have enough for groceries and to cover my part of the rent. That was the tiny glimmers of hope that I had to hang on to week over week. Or the next week it might have been like, oh, thank God they don't have any hours for me. I can actually get some sleep on Saturday. That was the next bit of hope. So just always finding the brightness in the situation and the next step that you could get to, celebrating every time I got a promotion or a raise, and just failing forward, knowing, I mean, at that point, what did I have to lose? I mean, I didn't have anything to lose. Now I probably have a lot more fear about life and my career and everything else that I have to work through because I have everything to lose. But then is like, there wasn't a mistake bigger than, you know, starting where I did in life, which is 1,000% behind the starting line. So.
You know, as you talk about your growth growing experiences in your life. When your daughter was born, they gave you some pretty dire predictions about what her life might be like. And even in the Depression, there was that glimmer of hope. There was that little kernel of energy that kept you moving forward.
Yeah, I distinctly remember lying in the maternity ward in my bed and thinking, I am going to give this child every single opportunity that she would have if she wasn't born to a teen mom by the time she turns 18. So when she graduated, or it was when she graduated high school, and those two time frames kind of, you know, we're pretty close together, but when she graduated high school, that was my I made it moment. I've never had a more proud moment than to see my beta club top 10% daughter who could go to, you know, and I wanted her to go to whatever college she wanted to go to, and I didn't want finances to be an issue, although I did, you know, I was strong about getting good grades, and because I didn't know what the future would hold, and so it was all about academics and ensuring that she made wise decisions. And you know, whereas my son might have had more of a fluffy mom, you know, my daughter, she didn't get the "oh, you had a bad day, I'm going to bake you cookies" kind of mom. She had the mom that taught her all the survival skills and how much work that you have to do to be successful in this world. And I probably raised my daughter more like men raise their sons. But you know what? She is who she is today, and we both made it. So
for those who are listening now and they're hearing your story and perhaps wondering if maybe they've got a bombshell businesswoman inside of them, are you born being a bombshell, using your description of what a bombshell woman is that something that you're born with? Is that something you sort of grab off the shelf and study over time? How does that happen?
I think that anyone who aspires to be a bombshell can be a bombshell. Anyone who is determined enough to study themselves and the world and how they fit into the world, to find a little bit of humility and a whole bucket of grace. I think any woman, whether you're introverted or extroverted, whether you're a highly sensitive person or if you're a high D kind of a sharper personality, I think any woman can be a bombshell. And I walk readers through the process in my book from just historically following your breadcrumbs, finding those commonalities in your life where your passion and your skill set and what you're recognized for by others, where those things come together. So now you have a good understanding of what you're good at. I walk them through a personal branding exercise where they understand not only how do I see myself, but how do other people perceive me? And what are they saying about me when I'm not in the room? And does that match who I think I am? And if not, then what's the plan to ensure that other people see the value that I see in myself? And those are some basic things that whether you're a female entrepreneur or a stay-at-home mom or a corporate woman, that's pretty basic. But the thing about female entrepreneurs that I see so frequently is they're good at what they do, but they don't feel like a businesswoman. And so that causes so much insecurity that I decided to then take a step further and help these women with goal setting and simple marketing plans and hiring and managing team members and working with creative vendors like a website designer, a graphic designer, and all those things that cause so much anxiety in an otherwise confident woman who starts her business because, say, she's great at cutting hair, and so she left the salon that she was at to start her own business, and it's like, oh my gosh, now I have to keep up with social media, and I have to manage my team, and I have to use software. I have a whole chapter on easy technology. Those are things that shake a woman's confidence in a business world. Again, men probably are like, oh, you know, screw it, just do it. That's Richard Branson's motto. And women tend to get overwhelmed by that. And so now we're dealing with, oh, I'm not being a good enough mom or a good enough wife or a good enough daughter or a good enough volunteer. And all these things in my business are so out of control, and I feel overwhelmed. And so now we're not feeling much like a bombshell at all. And on, to top it all off, we signed up for the paper plates again for our kids' class party. So now we're totally failing.
Right.
And we're, you know, we're talking about amazingly talented, contributing women who are likely the rocks for everybody in their life. And yet they're tearing themselves apart because there's just so many little naggy things, whether it's society or businesses or lack of structure, that's eating them. And I'm just saying, hey, one step at a time, sister. Let's get to know you. Let's get to know the world. Let's get to know your customers. Let's get to know your employees, if you have them. Let's put some processes together, and then just take it one step at a time until you start feeling like that bold, brave female entrepreneur.
So it sounds like, in terms of personal branding, which it sounds like that's the place for people to kind of begin.
Yes.
It really is a matter of how you see yourself, how others see you, and then if there's a mismatch, figuring out what you need to do to present that person on the outside who you see yourself as on the inside. Is that it?
Absolutely.
Okay.
Absolutely. 1,000%. And I teach, I have a whole talk that I do just on that for conferences. I have a module that I do in training sessions with Fortune 100 companies. I mean, this is not just for female entrepreneurs. This is basic survival. And the number one thing that I figured out, without knowing that I figured it out, as a very young person who didn't know much about anything, to be real honest, I had a lot of grit and not a lot of knowledge about how to do the whole adulting thing. But I did figure out that if I sold myself in a way that was authentic to me, that I could sustain that, because I wasn't trying to be someone I wasn't, and that people would take notice and give me opportunity, and the right people and opportunities would come find me.
And it sounds like you were right.
I was right, by gosh. I was right about one thing, at least, right? And, you know, and that's just been, that's where I start with all of my clients, my one-on-one clients or groups, or the beginning of any type of training programs that I have. We do always start with personal branding, because it's very hard to understand how you fit into the bigger picture, or how your employees, your customers, or peers will interact with you if you don't understand your piece of the puzzle.
You make a distinction in the Bombshell Businesswoman that gets so many people caught up in sort of like a word salad, and often a nonsensical word salad, and that is, you make a distinction between a company mission and a vision statement. We're going to take a break, but when we come back, I want you to give us the magic pill for how to figure out what your company mission is and how that is different from your vision statement. Okay, maybe I'll let you give us two magic pills, but that's it. Just two.
Okay.
Folks, this is Pamela Brewer. You're listening to Mind Talk and a conversation with Amber Hurdle, who is the author of The Bombshell Businesswoman. We will be back in just a moment. All right, Amber, two magic pills. company mission and a vision statement. What are they and what's the difference?
Okay, well, they're not interchangeable, much to popular belief. Your mission statement is just a real clear statement of what you do, why you exist. And your vision statement is a clear strategy to work towards for the future. So your mission is like Mission Impossible. It's what we're doing right now. Vision is the vision of what you're looking for in the future. So some examples, Pinterest, our mission is to help people discover the things they love and inspire them to go do those things in their daily life. That's why they show up to work every single day. Now, American Express, on the other hand, has a vision to have extraordinary customer service. We work every day to make American Express the world's most respected service brand. So that's aspirational. Mission is what's going on right now. This is what we're doing. Vision is aspirational.
Well, that sounds like two pretty good magic pills. I like this. Tell us.
And you can have those for your life, too.
What do you
just
mean?
Just as an aside.
How do you plug that into your own personal life?
Well, as much as you need a mission and vision for your business to be very clear on what your business does and where you want it to go in the future, you need that for your life as well. And that was one thing that I learned in my very early 20s. I believe it was Stephen Covey who walked people through a personal mission statement and a personal vision statement. So understanding what you're about right now, who are you? And then understanding where you want to go and what you want to aspire for in the future on a personal side is equally as important, because you can't compartmentalize life, business and personal. That's all under the umbrella of what you do every day from the time you wake up to the time you go to sleep.
So it sounds like it is a core to the Bombshell Woman.
It absolutely is, yes.
You talk about values. Where do values come in to all of this?
Well, values are important for your business because they're the family rules of your business, if you will. And they help you make decisions, whether that is opportunities that you will pursue or whether that is the type of person that you employ. And I say all the time, you know, you can teach someone how to run a cash register, but you cannot teach someone how to smile. You can teach someone how to you know, decorate a shelf in your boutique, but you cannot teach them to have integrity or to be very warm with your customer. You can over time, but if they come in innately that way, it's a whole lot faster to get them up to speed on the technical type of things. But even in your personal life, and I love Paul Coliani, who is the host of the Overwhelmed Brain podcast. He and I walked through this process together. And it's just taking a values inventory and then deciding what are the highest values that you have. And for me, I discovered that family is at the tippity top. So that's for business, or that's for my life. And that's for a variety of reasons, all the way from my family being supportive of me, starting my own family from the time I was 16, we lost my husband's youngest daughter in 2008. We've lost my father-in-law. I know how brief life can be, and I know how crazy life can be. And nothing to me is more important than everything pointing back to serving my family. That is me. That doesn't have to be somebody else's highest value, but it is mine. So as I plan my business, of which I'm the CEO, I have to keep that value in mind in order to make my decisions. It could be that passion is a high value for someone, and so you would not want to marry someone or hire someone or partner with somebody who did not allow you to live out that value of passion. It doesn't necessarily mean that they have to have the same level as you, but they certainly couldn't be someone that would be annoyed by your passion or want to stifle your passion or put you in a box, because then you're going to have a miserable life. If you can identify those values for your business or for your life, I think you have a sandbox in which you can play and safely invite people into and know that you're going to have a lot less resistance in life.
You know, so many people, when the issue of values comes up, get kind of stuck in terms of even how to begin. You actually have a values inventory in the Bombshell Businesswoman. So this is very helpful. Thank you on behalf of everyone who will read your book. Thank you very much for giving us a place to start when it comes to really identifying what we value, and your point that what you value might be very different from what I value, but it doesn't make either one right or wrong. It is simply what you as an individual value is so important.
Absolutely. And as we are moving into that goal setting period of you know, whether it's for your business or your personal goals, you know, January is always that time to start thinking about it, perhaps in this November, December time. As you're making those goals, my challenge would be to see if it aligns with your values. Because if they don't, it's not going to work. Because the things that you value most in this life, if they're in conflict with the goals that you have created, you have just bought yourself a first-class ticket on the struggle bus. So the values is important to nail down before you start creating any type of goals or strategic planning.
Yeah, I don't think any of us want a first-class ticket on the struggle bus.
No. I've ridden it before, ladies. You do not want your ticket. I promise.
And so many of us put ourselves right there in first class on the struggle bus.
Mm-hmm.
Talk about a glamour goal. So does that mean that after I've done all this work, I learn how to put my makeup on?
No. In fact, that's probably hair and makeup for the original Bombshell Businesswoman. Those are definitely not my greatest strengths. I talk about glamour goals because the definition of glamour is it's highly appealing, right? So it's an attractive or exciting quality that makes certain people or things seem appealing or special. And what I found, and this is both in corporate and small business both, that these arbitrary goals are made just for the sake of having something to track. I don't know, to justify existence or because you feel like you have to have goals, but they're not significant. And so everything in the week for the week, in the day for the day, all those operational demands, those urgent and important, you know, my hair is on fire type stuff, always seems to take the time and energy of the people who are working towards these quote goals. But if you make your goals glamorous, attractive or exciting, if there is some way greater why that if you accomplish this, then you will ultimately get this, now we're talking about something different. And I only like for my bombshells to have 3, maybe 5 glamour goals. And so I'll give an example. Like if you, let's say you are a boutique, if you increase your sales by $30,000, we'll just pull a number, over the next 12 months, what will that mean for you? That means that you can hire another part-time sales associate, which means you can then actually leave the boutique at a reasonable hour and go be at home with your family, or you could start those voice lessons that you wanted to start. Maybe it's that you can take a better vacation and explore the world like you've dreamed about doing since you were a child. That is glamorous. Making $30,000 more this year, especially if one of your values is not financial, if you're not motivated by money, arbitrarily saying, I want to make $30,000 more this year in my boutique is not going to get you there. A bigger picture. This year, for example, one of my glamour goals was to publish my book. That I knew what that meant in terms of the bigger picture in the long game. And so this year was rough. It was hard. I'm not saying that reaching these glamour goals is going to be a piece of cake if you just follow your values and your mission. And I mean, that's not how it works. I mean, it's a good goal should push you. I've said multiple times in the past few weeks, like, I don't even know where my comfort zone is anymore. Like, it's off the map. I'm so far away. And I needed to do that, right? So this book got me there, and we'll build on that next year with Glamour Goals for 2018.
All right. So I think I got a handle on the glamour goals. Now we got the red lipstick marketing plan. Now do I learn how to put on my makeup?
Actually, this is where I get to make fun of all that makeup. So we all know We all know the YouTube videos where, you know, women are just contouring their face, or like literally painting their face, and then they blend it all together and they put on their false eyelashes, which, and again, I don't have anything against any of this, but they do it on that high speed video because it takes so long that if they're going to get it into this video, they have to, you know, fast forward through it all. And I think that, you know, women tend to think that we have to go through all that trouble in our marketing. And the truth is, if we just put on a little red lipstick and maybe some sunglasses, or a little red lipstick and some concealer, it doesn't take a lot of effort to have a big impact, to just go run to the store or whatever. But because we're women and we like to do all the contouring and all that kind of stuff to just make it look like it's the absolute best that it could possibly be, and then it ends up turning into something that's not even real, we do that with our marketing because there's so many different social media platforms. There's old school marketing practices. There's the new way of doing things. There's Facebook ads. And then there's, you know, do I advertise in the local magazine or newspaper? There's pay-per-click. I mean, there's just so many different things that we contend with, that my suggestion is we just dial it back, sister, just like that red lipstick and the sunglasses. Like, let's keep it simple and have a big impact. Now, how can we do that? I break it into three different categories. So there's active marketing strategies, which is when you go out and you let people know about your business. There are passive marketing strategies, meaning if you have invited people to your business home, that you're prepared for them. So that could be like your website, that could be the signage on your front door, that sort of thing. And then there are keep in touch marketing strategies. And that's more like e-newsletters or sending coupons or perhaps we missed you type postcards in the mail, ways to keep top of mind with your existing and potential customers. And so my strategy, and again, I know you said I had my list of values. Well, I know how busy Bombshells are, and I like to keep things simple for them. So I gave them three different checklists. So you check a couple different strategies in each of these three categories, and then you figure out, how am I going to measure it? What does success look like? And what's the time frame, and what's the budget? And then at the end of 3 months, because in small business, we have to be nimble. Sometimes we need to try things and give it kind of give it a finish line and say, did this work or did this not work? And if it does work, then you put that in your next 3 month red lipstick marketing plan. And if it didn't, then that's an area where you can pivot. So it's something, a quick marketing plan might be that you host an open house in your active marketing activities, that you begin doing text message promotions, and that you start advertising in your local media. So that's your active. Your passive is that you update your website, that you update your search engine optimization strategy for your SEO, like if people are typing something in and looking for you. So if it's like, best ribs in Memphis, then you need to start working on ways for people to land on your website when that happens. And then moving to the keep in touch, maybe just implementing an e-newsletter and following up with clients you haven't seen in a while. Now, does that sound uber complicated? I just spit all of that out in 3 minutes or less, and that is your entire marketing plan for the next 3 months. Focus. I think focus is the key word.
Absolutely.
Leave the contouring to the Kardashians.
I'm not even going to go there. But where I am going to go is one of the pieces that actually comes along with the Bombshell Businesswoman is a lot of information on the website. And so I took a peek at some of the thoughts for the day that you offer, and one of them, well, so many of them just seem to be so right on target, particularly for women. But one of them is kind of what I hear throughout your life, which is the awareness that the knowledge that every challenge has a solution. So I will stop stopping. Oh my goodness.
That one honestly gets me a little emotional because I look at these women who have all the potential in the world and they just give up. And so they never reach their potential, or they, I won't say never because they are working on that, but they have not yet reached their potential because they will go down a path. They won't have an answer. They don't, you know, plan B didn't work out. But what they don't realize is that there's plan C, D, E, F, all the way to Z. And it might not turn out the way that you originally thought it would turn out. It might be that you just have to start taking steps towards where you think you're supposed to go, and then keep failing forward when things don't work out, and figuring out the next solution and the next solution. I mean, that's all life is a series of figuring out the next best decision. It won't always be the right decision. It's just your next best decision. So keep figuring out the solution.
For all of those folks listening who want to learn more about what you're doing and, quite frankly, how to stop stopping, what's a website where people can get more information?
The book's website is thebombshellbusinesswoman.com, and I did about a 40-page workbook to go along with the book. All the tools and resources that are mentioned, there's links to all of that in there. There's a free book club discussion guide. We have a version where if you wanted to just meet up one time with fellow bombshells, or if you wanted to meet over the course of 4 weeks, we have ways to do that, discussions, how to manage everything. I mean, we have free menus and a signature cocktail, a signature mocktail. I mean, we've just made sure that every opportunity was addressed. And then there's also free, the daily affirmations, which you just pulled from. I think that a positive mindset every single day is very critical, especially when you start getting out of your comfort zone and stepping into your inner bombshell. And then also a daily devotional for those who want to begin their bombshell journey in a biblically based way.
Amber Hurdle, author of The Bombshell Businesswoman, How to Become a Bold, Brave Female Entrepreneur. Thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you, Pamela. It's a pleasure to be here.
Thank you for joining us today on this edition of Mind Talk. Mind Talk is available daily at myndtalk.org. You can also download the free Mind Talk app from the iTunes App Store or from Google Play. Mind Talk is produced by Jim Brown and 26x2 Communications. I would love to hear any questions or comments you have about today's program or any Mind Talk program. So send me an email to Pamela@mindtalk.org. That's myndtalk.org. I'd love to know where in the world you are listening from, so let me know that as well. Mind Talk is provided daily as an educational public service. It is not intended to replace any work that you might choose to do with a medical, mental health, or other professional. And remember always, if it's unacceptable, then it's unacceptable. You take care.